I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Jessica was a junior at high school in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. She was a model student. Her stepfather called her the Little Princess. But as her parents left her alone, she started to host parties at her house. She had sex first when she was 14. Then she met Dwayne, an older high school dropout who was dealing drugs. Oh my God, she thought, he is so fine. Pretty soon they're sleeping together, and Jessica gets pregnant.
Pittsfield is very boring. There's nothing for us to do. I used to just drive around in my car with all my friends and hang out at the parks or hang out at some friend's house. We don't have anywhere to go. Nowhere. That's probably why there's so many pregnant people, because there's nothing else to do but have sex.
This hour, we'll take a closer look at what it's like to be a teenage mother in America today. After all, this country has the highest percentage of unmarried teenage mothers in the developed world. Why is that? Is that because so many of these girls are raised in broken or unhappy homes? Is it a failure of the public school system or the economy? Or is it that the teenagers, boys and girls, lack a moral compass? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Just a reminder, on our website this hour, theconnection.org, we have a gallery of photographs from the book that we're about to talk about and some of the young women that you'll meet throughout the hour. Joanna Lipper's with me in the studio. Her new book explores in depth the lives of half a dozen teenage mothers in Western Massachusetts. And we'll meet one of the young women who's featured in the book in just a few moments. The book itself is called Growing Up Fast, and Joanna Lipper's here with me in the studio. Nice to have you here, Joanna.
Good morning.
Is Pittsfield in any way unique? Did you choose it as a place to take your camera and take your pen because there was a high number of teenage pregnancies?
I came to Pittsfield completely by chance because Carol Gilligan, the psychologist who wrote the book In a Different Voice, had invited me to come and make a documentary film about some teenage mothers at a teen parent program. She was teaching a writing workshop at. So it was arbitrary in the beginning. And then when I got there, I wouldn't say that Pittsfield is unique. It's like so many cities and towns all over the United States that are losing their manufacturing bases and struggling in the wake of the departure of big business. In the case of Pittsfield, it was the General Electric Company.
When you talk to the girls who end up pregnant, some of them pregnant at 14, some of them later than that, there's kind of an acceptance that they all have that it's not a really weird thing to wind up pregnant when you're 14 or 15 or to end up at your high school prom with the baby somewhere in the audience. Did that catch your attention?
Well, in Pittsfield, in the teen parent program, there are about 60 new teenage girls per year, and that's mostly from two public high schools. So that means that in the high schools, every student has either a friend or a relative or someone that they know that's a teen parent. I think that's also a function of Pittsfield being an economically distressed place. I think that, you know, economic distress has a lot to do with teen parenthood.
I want to play, if I can, just one more clip from one of the young women who shows up in the film that you made back in 99. Can we hear that?
When I was 16 years old, I really wanted to have a baby because all my friends had babies. And I sort of planned it in a way because I didn't take any birth control, so I knew what was going to happen. I wanted a baby because I'd have a friend 24 hours a day, and I thought they were really cute.
That's Shayla in the film, and when I heard her speaking about that, that was one of the moments, and you write about it in the book as well, when you think, wow, did she know what she was getting in for? In a way, all the young women end up answering that question themselves, don't they?
Yes, well, Shayla is herself the daughter of a teen mother. I think her parents were 16 and 17 when they had her. So for her, that was something that she was accustomed to. I think over the course of the 4 years that I worked with her and the other young women in the book, you see their attitudes changing. So Shayla, that quote is from when, you know, she was at the beginning of working with me. And then 4 years later, she looks back and she herself says, I was a very naive 16-year-old.
For many girls, though, it does seem that at that early moment, the baby is, what would you say, a way out, a way of changing a life that's already been somewhat unhappy.
Well, I think that when you go back to Jessica's quote, when she says, you know, we have nowhere to go, nowhere, you know, that's not just a literal feeling. I think it's a spiritual feeling as well that these girls have in a certain way at a young age, a feeling of looking around them and seeing adults who have lost their jobs or who are depressed or who have turned to drugs or alcohol. You know, there's a lot of household dysfunction in the backgrounds of many of the teenage girls in my book, everything ranging from physical abuse to sexual abuse to, you know, having a family member incarcerated during their childhoods. Just a lot of different factors that, you know, at an early age make them, you know, number one, want to get out of the family home. And number two, I think they sort of want to revise their own childhoods and the traumas of their own childhoods by creating the nuclear family that they maybe never had, by having, you know, the two-parent family that they maybe never had, by giving their child, you know, the happiness and maybe stability and predictability that they never had. Now, of course, those things are ideals, they're dreams, you know, it's a fairy tale vision. But many adolescents, I mean, you know, first love is intense. Everything when you're an adolescent, you know, dreams seem very vivid and real. And within, you know, that is a dream for them that seems within reach. Whereas something like, you know, going away to college or, you know, moving to a different city seems much more difficult and impossible. Whereas having a baby is a plausible ambition. It's something they think they can accomplish.
I think one of the things that's particularly interesting about the book, Joanna, is that it's a collection of other people's stories. It's you're in many ways allowing the young women to tell their own stories. And I think perhaps it's a good moment to bring Liz Figueroa into the conversation. Liz is one of the young women Joanna Lipper's writing about in her book, Growing Up Fast. Liz is 21 years old now, mother of Peter, who's 4 years old. And Liz is joining us from WHID in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Liz, it's nice to have you on the program.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine. Now, you're in Wisconsin, no longer in Pittsfield. Did you make the shift a while ago? Why did you leave your hometown?
Well, I figured that if there was a chance to get out of there, I'd take it and try to get to new and better places.
Did it work? Are you in a new and better place?
Oh, yeah. definitely. I got a lot more accomplished up here so far than probably would have had in Pittsfield.
Are you working there?
Right now, actually, I just lost my job, but I'm currently starting another job next week.
Liz, why don't you talk about where you were working?
Okay. I was working at the Miles Kimball Outlet Store in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And I was there for about a year and 8 months and recently was let go. And I've been on unemployment since. And then now I'm just trying to wait for my other job to let me know when I can start.
Liz, can I ask you what it was like kind of opening up your life to Joanna, to tell your story, to see it in the film, and then to see it in the book?
actually, it was, at first it was kind of, I'll be honest, kind of annoying, only because, I don't know, like, I was a little afraid to open up at first because I didn't know if I wanted everybody to know about me. And then I put thought into it and I did it. The filming part, and the book part, it was annoying. It just, cause she was there all the time and I wasn't used to having somebody there all the time. And
Yeah. So
it went okay. I mean, after a while I got used to it and I just, you know, adjusted and it went pretty good from there.
I think it takes a lot of courage for anybody in any circumstance to open up their life to someone that they don't know, though. I mean, I you should be sort of congratulated for that. I want to go back, if I can, to part of what we were talking about earlier in the program, why it is teenagers get pregnant. If you kind of look back at your own life, was it, you know, growing up in a difficult household? Was that part of it? Your dad left when you were 5, isn't that right?
Yes. Well, when I look back, I actually, I didn't try to get pregnant, to be honest. It kind of just happened. I wasn't being responsible when I was having sex. So that was on my end, my own fault for not being responsible. But if anything, I really don't look back at to it. I mean, when I look back to it, I really don't see myself doing it on purpose or having a real reason. But it could be the reason that maybe my mom and dad separated and just me kind of venturing out on my own. So it probably had some effect when I, you know, with the sex part of it. But that's really all I can say.
Your mom kept you out of school for a large part of your childhood, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
What was that all about?
Well, when I was in preschool, I remember her keeping me out a lot, basically, because she was sick. She would say she was sick and wanted me home. And I think now that I look at it, it was because she wanted somebody to keep her company during the day because she was lonely for a while. Other times she would keep me home to take care of her. Because sometimes she wouldn't get up in the morning and I'd have to prepare her coffee or something like that for her. So there were some times when she'd keep me home. Other times it was just, I started not wanting to go to school because my mom didn't want me to go. So mm-hmm. I figured I didn't have to either. So that's.
And then if we sort of fast forward a few years, Liz, you got into fights with your mom. She beat you. You got in trouble for hitting your mom at one point. You were arrested for that, right?
Yes. What happened was that day, my mom, I was home. I just got home from being in a foster home, actually, a couple days previous. And my mom goes out to garbage cans and collects cans for money to buy her cigarettes. So this one particular day, she wanted me to go with her and go into garbage cans and get cans for her. And I told her that I did not want to do that because it was, gross. And I just was embarrassed by it. So she got in an argument with me, and what I was doing is I started brushing my hair, and she stated that I hit her when I was brushing my hair and called the cops because I didn't want to stay home. I was going to go to my grandmother's and call the cops so that I had punched her in the face, and they arrested me because they listened to the parent more likely anyway. So that's what happened, and just kind of went from there.
I'm reading this story. I'm listening to you tell this story, and I'm thinking to myself, man, if I was that age, I'd end up, in a relationship too young as well. When you think back to when you first started having sex with boys, when you first started, having intimate relationships outside the home, was that a part of it? Because home life was so rotten?
I look at it in some ways. I look at it that way, that because of it, to me, that was a source for attention at times. Like I felt like somebody cared about me when I was sleeping with them, because you're close to someone and, you don't really realize what you're doing when you're in that moment. But I guess that could be part of the reason why. I mean, I don't really know what was going through my head at the time. I think I was just being crazy.
And Joanna Lipper, in collecting Liz's story and that of the other girls in your book, Growing Up Fast, there is that feeling from all of them of some kind of regret looking back and, damn, if I just paid more attention or been thinking of the consequences.
Well, I think, when you're 13 or 14 years old, you kind of think of yourself as invincible. I mean, Amy, who got pregnant at 14, says, I never thought this would happen to me. Jessica says, I heard about this in school, but I was just doodling on a piece of paper thinking this would never happen to me. You always think it's going to be somebody else.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, some remarkable stories this hour, a chance for us to talk with people about teenage pregnancy and to hear your own thoughts about why it is in this country there are so many teenagers who continue to get pregnant, who aren't married or choose not to get married. We'd like to have you join us. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. And this hour, a chance to talk about teenage pregnancy. With me on the program this hour, Liz Figueroa. She was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, grew up in Pittsfield, now living in Wisconsin with her boyfriend and her young son. Joanna Lipper is here in the studio with me. She's a film director and a writer. Her brand new book is called Growing Up Fast. It is a collection of stories of the young women who she followed over a, 5-6 year period? Is that about right?
It was 4 years.
4 years, okay. And I want to kind of pick things up where we were before we went away for the break, Joanna. The relationships, I want you to speak generally here, that you found the young women getting into, did they tend to be with older men as a rule, with tough men as a rule, with abusive men as a rule? What did you discover?
I think it was frequent. And, when, for example, Amy in eighth grade was dating a senior in high school, and that's a huge difference. I mean, between, you know, the maturity of 14-year-old and senior in high school. So she was one example of that. You know, I also think that, yes, there were some of the girls who were dating men that were violent or who had drug problems, either who were addicts or dealers or both. So there was some violence involved in some of the relationships as well, and some dating violence, and that was a factor, I think.
In fact, part of your research takes us back to the 80s in Pittsfield, when drugs really started to move into that town, and the kind of I was going to use the word cool, and I think that's probably the wrong one, but the dealers who came in, and they kind of represented a different, faster, more street-smart culture, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at Jessica talking about how boring Pittsfield is, and then, you know, you quoted her talking about how Corrine was so fine, mm-hmm. You know, I think that you basically can see how something different and something unusual and something, you know, a glamorous kind of hip-hop sort of lifestyle could appeal in a way to a teenager like Jessica, who's looking for an escape.
And Liz Figueroa, how does the younger version of you fit into that? Because at one point, you're also kind of drawn to hang out with gang members. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Well, I used to hang out with gang members a lot, but I don't know, because when I grew up in Springfield, so when I grew up there, it's sort of like Pittsfield. The only difference is there's a lot more things to do, and there's a lot more people to be around, and there's definitely that influence.
Tell me if you can, and I know it's a hard question, but what's the attraction? What's the why to a gang member if that's the person that you're drawn to?
Well, at that time, it was because to me, when I knew about gang members, it was because they were tough and they kind of ruled over things, and so that's and a lot of them were very good looking. So to me, that's my reason why.
Was it protection? I mean, that this person's going to make sure that nothing bad happens to me? I don't know. I'm guessing here.
Yeah. Sort of. I think possibly that was a possibility of it being a portion of it. Because from what I remember, when I hanged around them, I did feel a little more protected. And at times I did feel unprotected because of the situation that gangs get into. So it was kind of a, you know, half and half situation with that.
1-800-423-8255. That's the number to join the conversation. Let's go to Cambridge, Massachusetts. Britell's joining us now. Britell, thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I just wanted to say I'm 16, and I have a couple of friends that are pregnant as well. And I went to like a very a school that is very in the upper classes, and it's like one of the best schools in the country. And I still think that a big problem with like suburban schools in suburbia is that like you feel like there's nothing to do that. And I think it's the school setting that kind of, it makes you feel like dead inside. And that's what people go and do drugs and have sex for. And I think that it's bad when you have like abstinence only education and things like that, because it doesn't address what I think is the real problem.
So what's missing at the school, Britell?
I think what's missing is maybe more ways for people to meet together and to really have support in whatever decisions they make, like more support about really. And I think also just creative outlets.
Is this simple stuff like sports teams or clubs or just ways of passing the time once school's over?
I think it's more like outside of school, because I think what, at least in my town, what everybody, like the parents were all like so into getting ready for college and getting yourself so that, you know, you're getting to the best college. And I think that that's really the wrong way to make it be, because it, like, then there's no like spiritual creative growth that happens. It's much more about like the future and kind of like that.
I'm hearing you sort of say less on the glee club, less on the you know, being in a play, helping somebody make a film, more on making sure that your chemistry goes from 85% to 87%. Is that part of it, Britell?
Exactly. I think that is part of it. And I think that I think that people just need, they need more information about stuff, but that's only part of it. It's also definitely more of, like, I think the problem with suburbia, like, what is everybody to do but go to, like, go to dumb parties and, you know, just do drugs in the back of, like, 7-Eleven rather than go to, like, community centers where they decide what, you know, the interesting stuff that they want to do is and where they can do projects and kind of run their own lives a little bit.
Britel, I want to thank you for calling.
Thank you.
What do you think, Joanna? You're scribbling a few notes there. Is this chapter 14?
Well, in the last chapter of the book, I talk about several programs that I think offer exactly what she was talking about, social and emotional learning. I mean, right now we're seeing such a basis on, you know, such an emphasis on standardized testing and cognitive learning as sort of a measure of success in schools and amongst teenagers. But I think social and emotional learning is just as important and spiritual growth. And
can you give me an example of social and emotional learning? Like what physically you would change at a school to include something like that?
Well, there's a program I discussed called the Council Program, which started at the Crossroads School in Los Angeles in Brentwood and now is at the Palms Middle School and lots of other schools in the Los Angeles Unified School District. It was founded by someone named Jack Zimmerman. And what that is during school, 2 hours a week from the time kids are in seventh grade till the time they graduate, they meet in groups, and it's based on the Native American tradition of interaction between the older generation and the younger generation. So there's one leader, there's a talking stick, and the emphasis is
so
really
seniors, juniors, freshmen, all mixed
no,
together?
No, I think they do it by grade.
Okay.
But, you know, there's one leader who's an adult or a teacher, but then basically, the emphasis is on sharing your thoughts, your feelings, your questions. The nickname for the course is Mysteries because it's really about anything that's like deep and troubling to you, whether it's questions about the environment, whether it's about things in your family life. But there's kind of, it's to get over this, you know, silence about just personal issues and emotions and feelings. And nothing is taboo. Sex isn't taboo. You know, questions about race and identity aren't taboo. They managed to integrate, you know, sex education and health education into a discussion about larger forces as well.
And Liz, if this had been something that you might have had access to when you were 13 or 14, do you think it would have opened your eyes or changed your mind or changed your life in any way?
Probably because when I was as young as I was, there wasn't very much people who would be open to talk about, you know, sex education wasn't really in at that time. Like you would hear it in health class, you know, once in a while, but they weren't very descriptive on it. And I think it would have helped me out a lot because I would have understood a little bit more, I think, and had somebody to ask questions to that would answer them and have a place to, you know, have people to talk to. I think that would have helped a lot.
Could you imagine sitting in a group of students who are in your class and raising questions about race and raising questions about, you know, your period and stuff that that's often not talked about? Could that work?
Like if I was in a regular classroom and just asked about it, or
in the sort of small group that Joanna was describing, whether or not that could work?
I think I would have been able to. I probably would have had to get comfortable first with everybody before I did. I probably would have felt funny. But I definitely would have opened up and started asking a lot of questions that I probably had at the time that weren't being, you know, answered by anybody else or in the school system.
Let's go back to our phone lines to Augusta, Georgia now. Mike's joining us on the line. Mike, thanks for calling.
Sure.
What are you thinking?
Well, I heard the promo for your program earlier this morning, and one thing that struck me right off the bat is the whole focus is on teenage girls. And I hear this a lot. You know, we worry about teen pregnancy, teen girls. You hear very little about the flip side of the equation, and that's where are the teen guys in all this? Where are they being mentored? Where are they being held accountable for what they're doing and taught that, hey, you know, to get someone pregnant, you've created a responsibility either for yourself or for society. And I often feel that's under-addressed. I've got a daughter who's 11, and even she's commented that it seems like boys quite often in these types of discussions just get put off to the side. And that's a real interesting perspective coming from a girl. Just wanted to comment on that and see what kind of feedback your guests had on that.
All right, Michael. Thanks for your call.
Well, in
yes,
my
sir,
book,
thank you.
In my book, Growing Up Fast, I included the teen fathers in the book as well. So they're right there along with the teenage mothers. And, you know, for example, one of them, CJ, talks about, you know, growing up not having his real father in his life and about the emptiness that that left. You know, other times, you know, some of the teen mothers told me about their boyfriends witnessing domestic violence and the impact that had on them, which was pretty devastating. So I think that there are, you know, for the girls, there's a teen parent program, which you automatically can transfer into once you get pregnant, and you can stay there until your baby's old enough to walk. But there's really no special support for the teen fathers. And I think that's extremely difficult. And what I also...
When you say extremely difficult, you mean hard to do or that it ought to be done?
That it ought to be done. I think it's difficult to be a young man in that situation and, you know, not have the kind of support and mentorship that you might need to make decisions and to get your life on track. You know, because what I noticed too was that in the same way that teen parenthood was a rite of passage for many of the girls, for many of the young men in that community, incarceration or jail was, you know, whether it was, you know, there are mandatory minimums in Pittsfield for, you know, most drug offenses. So you saw in several cases, you know, teen fathers or young fathers in their early 20s, you know, going in and out of jail. And once it started, it can, you know, tended to continue. You know, they would be out for a while, then they'd do something, they'd be back in. And, you know, that was hard, both on, I think, their self-esteem and on their ability to play the role of a father adequately, on their ability to enter the workforce with, you know, a criminal record.
When you flip through the stories that Joanna has collected, you see that, you know, the men that Sherry and Amy and Shayla are with, they come and they go. Liz, in your case, you're still with Peter, is that right?
Yes, I am.
How long have you guys been together now?
About 4.5 years.
You had one period apart, right?
Yes, we did. But we were still kind of together. It was just more like a separation of where we lived, kind of to gather each other, you know, like as far as space goes. Because, you know, living together for 3 years, we kind of needed some space. So we did that, and so far it worked.
It makes Peter kind of an unusual character, though, in this collection of stories, because he's still with you. Is he an unusual character?
Actually, yeah. I mean, there's so many guys out there that will come and go in your life. And Peter, he's been pretty persistent with me. He doesn't want to let me go. And I like that because I don't have to worry about, you know, there's so much that you can worry about when you're a mom and not having the child's father being a part of your life together, that if he wasn't there, I think it would be very hard. Because I haven't had the experience of not having, you know, of having a child and not having the father there. So I think that he is a very unusual character because a lot of guys, you know, they won't stick around. Or if they do, it's very seldom that they pop in or, and out of their child's lives from what I have seen.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255 to Raleigh, North Carolina now. Francis is joining us. Francis, thanks for calling.
Yes, sir. I am absolutely stunned by what I'm hearing on this program. I can't believe that somewhere along the line somebody didn't tell this young girl that if she got pregnant that she was going to wind up, especially without benefit of marriage and the support of the father, that she was going to have to support this kid for 18 years until it was on its own.
Well, she's listening along to you, Francis. Why don't you ask her that question yourself?
Well, didn't anybody ever tell you this? I mean, how are you going to support this kid? You can't even stand on your own 2 feet. What were you thinking? Or were you?
Well, at the time, it was I was thinking, and I wasn't. I did have... I had one friend that was a teen mom, and I actually paid attention to what she did. It's hard, like, from my experience, yeah, there was a lot of me thinking if I would get married, if I had a child, would that be available? Would it not be? I did have somebody tell me that, but as far as me making my decisions at the time, I don't think I was thinking. So, I mean, there's times where you think and there's times where you don't think. You know, it's hard to explain.
I don't know, Francis, if you heard the part of the program when I mentioned that Liz's dad left when she was five, that her mom was, that, yes. that she fought with her mom. We're not talking about the types of parents that a lot of these kids have who are giving them the sort of guidance that, that they ought to have. I mean, that's got to count somewhere here, doesn't it? Yeah.
If I may, I spent a considerable amount of my early life in the third world where not only were conditions a great deal harsher than they are in the United States, infant mortality rate was extremely high. All this young lady had to do, once she was aware of what the sex act was to look around her. Now, she has just said, oh, yes, I went to my friend. Of course, she's a teenage mom as well. Who is supporting these young ladies? What we have done, it appears to me, is though we have created an environment that attracts the moth to the flame, that this is acceptable. I've heard teachers at the local junior college here in our county tell me about young ladies who've gotten out of high school, who've kept themselves chaste, are trying to do something for themselves and bring themselves up by their bootstraps.
Francis, I'm going to step in here because we're close to a break, and I do want to leave Liz just a moment here to answer back in terms of sort of accepting some kind of responsibility and looking back at all with regret, Liz?
A little, only because at the time I was in 10th grade, so there was regret because I wanted to finish school a little bit easier. When you hear that you're pregnant, it's not hard, but it's not easy, because with where I was at the time, in my frame of mind, it was I can't explain it.
That's all right. We're going to talk more about it when we come back after the break. Our number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. And we're talking this hour about a new book by Joanna Lipper called Growing Up Fast. Liz is one of the characters in that book, and she's agreed to join us for the balance of the program. We welcome your calls. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Dorothy Allison from Greenville, South Carolina, once wrote, there's two or three things I know for sure, and one of them is to have no loved version of your life but the one you make. This hour we're talking about growing up fast, and if there's anything that teenage mothers and fathers share is that they certainly do grow up fast when they become pregnant at ages 14, 15, 16. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Joanna Lipper, you were listening to that exchange between Francis and Liz. I'm interested in what your thoughts are.
Well, first of all, you cited that Dorothy Allison quote, and she was a huge influence on my approach to working with these young women. She talks about, you know, creating the story of your life, both through writing and by the way you live your life. And she talks a lot about the impact of physical abuse and sexual abuse in childhood and on what that does to your self-esteem and your outlook, you know, on the future and your search and your need for love. And, you know, 60% of teen mothers cite some history of sexual abuse. And it's a really astonishingly high number.
60%.
Yeah. I mean, the Journal of the American Medical Association did a survey of several studies, and that was the number that they came up with. And, you know, that's all forms of sexual abuse. It's not just only intercourse. It could be other things as well. But it's a very, very high number and a significant thing. And I think it's because girls who are sexually abused, that fact in their life often leads to some of the behaviors that put them at risk for teen parenthood. So in response to what Frances was saying about, you know, the decisions that these girls make and the factors that go into it, sometimes if you have an abusive situation at home, you're running away, you're depending on other people for shelter or for food, you're trying to get away from an abusive situation, you might be at risk, you know, for being with older men, for being in situations where there aren't as many boundaries as there would be. So it's, you tend to get into more dangerous situations if you're trying to escape that kind of background.
Liz, how many foster homes were you in?
a lot. Probably I'd say about at least 15 to 20 foster homes. Bounced around all over.
You go into a foster home, then you go back to your mom, then you go back to a foster home, or you go foster home to foster home?
Well, the first couple times is foster home mom, and then it went back to foster home. And then from there on, it just kind of bounced from foster home to foster home. Yeah, it was not nice.
How old
it was
were
a lot
at,
of them.
How old were you at that time?
My first foster home I was in, I was just turning 12, I think, from what I can remember. So it was like right after I hit puberty that I actually was put into a foster home for my first time.
Let's go back to the lines, 1-800-423-TALK. Samantha's joining us now from Somerville. Samantha, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Hi. I just wanted to congratulate the girl who's talking right now because she did have a hard life and maybe she did make some wrong decisions, but she's dealing with it and she's doing it well. And I don't think that that has been really addressed, that there many different things have led up to it. But the point is that now she's dealing with it well.
And Samantha, tell me just the world from the perspective that you see it. Have you got friends your age who...
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah. You know, it's not just one thing. It's many different factors. And it's partly the thing that other woman said before about emotional growth, that there isn't enough focus on that in schools. But and about the parents, I mean... It, of course, that plays a role in it, but the thing is that you can't. It's not that someone didn't tell you or anything, didn't tell you what would happen. Of course, in the back of your mind, you know that, but it doesn't mean it's going to do anything when everything else in your life is so difficult.
I'm closer to the age of the parent than the kid here, Samantha. Uh-huh. So I have a parent question for you because in some cases you see written down, you know what? Talk to your kids. They want to hear from you, even if you don't think that they want to hear from you. What would you say to parents?
I think definitely they want to hear from you. And it's not just about, like, you don't sit a person down and say, okay, so don't do drugs and don't have sex. You know, it's way one-sided. You have to try and get into the kid's mind and really not talk to them, but talk with them.
I think that there's an overemphasis on this idea that, you know, prevention of teen parenthood is all about, you know, sex and contraception, and there's too much of a focus on that, whereas, you know, parents and teachers and, you know, adults in the community also need to focus on giving kids the sense that they have expectations of them and, you know, giving them the life skills to get information about what might lie ahead in their future so that they understand the options and alternatives and the paths that they would have to go down to get to those points in the future. Because if you think your future is going to be going from working part-time at Burger King after school to working there full-time mm-hmm. after graduation, you know, a baby might be something exciting compared to that. It might be, you know, that love is a valuable resource you have to offer, and it's in the absence of other potential goals. So, and it gives your life meaning and significance to have the responsibility of raising a baby. And I'm talking about in bleak environments where college isn't taken for granted and where, you know, transitions to adulthood aren't as clearly demarcated.
Samantha, just a couple of minutes ago, Francis was talking about why it is that kids aren't taught not to have sex. And last night, the president included it in his State of the Union speech that the government thinks it's going to put more money into telling kids just don't have sex. Abstinence is an option that's not presented. Is that an option that kids want to hear?
I think that abstinence-only education is absolutely does not help the situation at all, because what happens is, everybody hears that. You hear that all the time. Just don't have sex. But that doesn't mean anything. What you have to do is really get into the emotional part of what sex is and teach them that and say, and what happens is if kids are going to have sex anyway, which they will, then you want them to be prepared so that they don't get pregnant. And you also want them to know that if something happens, there's people that they can talk to that they can get help so they're not alone in it.
Liz, you're listening along to this. Has Samantha got it right here?
Yeah, actually. she said a lot of it. Because what a lot of people do, like, I grew up, don't do drugs and don't have sex, don't drink alcohol. You know, you hear that all the time. And it kind of in its own way gets it gets old, you know, because you hear it so much. And like she said, I think they need to emphasize on sitting there and talking to you more about it and letting you know that there's numbers and people you can talk to, how to address the issue and how to ask these questions so you're not embarrassed. And, you know, like, I think they do need a lot more of that than just saying don't have sex. And I think they need to open up a little more on that subject. It seems like everybody's so quiet when it comes to that subject about it, because, you know, everyone looks at it as a bad thing in some ways. And I think that if you don't want people to go out and do that, then I think you need to express more about why it is so bad for people to do it, and you know, how to go along with it, where to go to, and stuff like that. So yeah, I think she covered it very well.
All right, 1-800-423-TALK. Next to Mebane, North Carolina, and Peter's joining us. Hi, Peter.
Yeah, hi.
Thanks for calling.
I think at the beginning of the program, you mentioned that the United States had the highest teen pregnancy rate of any industrialized country in the world. Is that assumption correct on my part?
Joanna, you're the expert here.
Yeah, amongst comparable industrialized countries, it does.
Comparable. Right.
Yeah.
And I'd like to know then, what are those countries doing that's different than this country? I mean, what's involved in their culture and education and parenting skills that they're doing that's different that this country is not doing?
Well, when you take examples like Sweden and France, they have a much more open attitude about teenage sexuality. It's an accepted part of the culture. It's not stigmatized. It's not a taboo. They also have a lot more support, economic support, for young people who are making the transition from adolescence to adulthood, more training programs, and just...
Is that, again, within the school system?
It's within the school system, and I think also within the communities. The Alan Guttmacher Institute is the best resource for that, and on my website, www.growingupfast.com, there's a whole list of links with all the statistics and resources. And if you go to the Guttmacher Institute, they have a lot of detailed information about the United States in comparison to other countries.
I can tell you that we'll have that link on our website, so you don't have to scramble necessarily for a pension. Pencil, we are at theconnection.org. But just in, are you saying then, Joanna, that kids in France are having as much sex as kids in America, that they're just being smarter about it?
I mean, I think it's also complicated when you compare two countries that are so dramatically different. I mean, you know, America has tremendous inequality, you know, and a lot of poverty. And I think it's much more complicated than just looking at who's having sex or who's not. I think it's about hope. And I think it's, you know, in many cases for these teen
parents. What do you mean it's about hope?
Well, I think for many cases, for some of these teenagers, the babies become, you know, the vessels for their hopes for the future. For example, you know, in the book, a lot of the teen mothers gave the kids really exotic names, changing the spellings of something like Leah from right. L-E-A-H to L-E-E-A-H and Ezekiel to Ezekiel, and just
looking
making
for distinction. That
yeah.
Sort of thing.
And I think that there's a desire for these kids to transcend, you know, their environment and to rise to a higher, you know, socioeconomic bracket.
Let's go to Providence, Rhode Island. Paula's joining us. Hi, Paula. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of hope, I was wondering, this question is for Liz, how are you going to raise your child differently, given that she's had such a poor role model for parenting?
Well, what I've done is I have personally looked at what my mom hasn't done and what I haven't had and decided that this is what I will give my child, the things that a child needs as far as comfort, you know, having a father, which, you know, is going really well with that. And making sure that I have a living, I have a job, making sure that I'm home with my child when I need to be, having, you know, having all the responsibilities that a normal, you know, like an adult would have, I have chosen to take. And in that instance, what I've done is looked at my past and said, my child is not going to have this, and he's going to go in the direction that will lead him, hopefully, in the right path. So I've kind of looked at my own past and I guess kind of, how do you say, researched my own past and kind of put it to change my child's future and somewhat in my own as well. So this way I'm not like my mom and I'm not like what my dad did, and give my child the opportunity that I didn't have.
Now, Liz, you're due to have another baby sometime soon. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that good news? Good news or bad news?
Yeah, it's good news, but a lot of people laugh because I'm 21. So, but it's a good news because, you know, it's with the same father and we have a stable relationship. So, to me, it's good news. I mean, it depends on how people look at it.
One quick last one for you, Liz. What did you miss most as a teenager? You say you look back on your life. What did you miss?
What I missed the most, honestly, was having someone to talk to, and my dad, because he wasn't around. I think that was, I know that that was the thing that bothered me the most when I was a child, is that I didn't have a father figure. I had all my mom's boyfriends that were coming in and out for figures as a father, which really wasn't a good thing. And so when I look back, I just wish that I had, you know, the normal father thing to, you know, go over his house, hang out, you know, do what normal kids would do with their dads. And I didn't have that. And I also look back and I wish that I had, you know, my education is definitely a big look back for me, because, I mean, I didn't have it yet. In some way, I always hear, oh, you didn't have education, but you sound fine. But it's like, I only learned from hearing everybody else. I didn't go to school enough to really learn what I need to know right now. And so I look a lot. There's so many things that I just wish I could have done as far as normal teenage normal teenagers get to do. I wasn't able to do that. I had to kind of settle down and take the parenting role pretty much immediately, because when you're pregnant, you automatically just stop being a teenager and you're already parenting. So there's a whole list.
Joanna, I have time for like a 5 or 10 second answer from you, but what did you learn most when you met people like Liz and the other women in writing your book?
I learned about resilience, and I learned about how, you know, young people can survive, you know, the most difficult backgrounds and still have potential for the future, and how important it is for this country not to write them off. Liz is only 21 years old. The other girls are only 21 years old. They're raising the next generation of kids, and we've got to support them in their efforts.
Thanks so much for coming in. Joanna Lipper, author of the book Growing Up Fast, and Liz Figueroa, I want to thank you for taking time to drive to the studio and be with us as well.
Thank you.
Liz was a teen mom. She's now 21, mother of 4-year-old Peter, soon to have another baby, as she said, in the summer. 1-800-423-8255 is the number to join us on this and other programs. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection.